At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
It's not like it's a competition that's on again next year. You have to wait a full Olympic cycle to go again. Realistically, most of the team aren't going to be here again for the next Olympics, so it's like it's do or die.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
Going back to Tokyo and to Cathal Dennehy, who was there earlier on, I believe, to watch what was one of the most extraordinary finals in the history of athletics. Carson Varholm, Cathal, what an unbelievable athlete this guy is.
Yeah, I mean, he's a freak, and I mean freak in the most complimentary sense of the word. It was, I mean, you said, as you said, that I am there, that was some. It will be something I and anyone else who was lucky enough to be in the stadium would be saying for as long as we live that we were there. Because, I mean, I've been watching sport. I'm 33, and I've been watching sport as long as I can remember, in athletics for the best part of 30 years, and I've never seen anything close to that on TV, in real life, anything. I don't think I've ever seen a sporting event. Now, I'm very biased in that sense, of course. And as I tweeted a while ago, I've been to the Nou Camp, I've seen Messi, I've been watching the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. And what happened this morning in Tokyo was just something, as I just wrote on the Independent website there, it's extraterrestrial, basically. And I think anytime, if it's cycling, if it's athletics, almost if it's any sport these days, there's always the kind of thing of suspicion. And I would say, while you can never be sure, talking to a lot of people around here, knowing the backstory of Carson Varholm and indeed the silver medalist Roy Benjamin, there's a lot of reasons to feel very good and very trustworthy, I think, in these performances. If you're going to, I guess, go into the things of explaining how he ran so fast, because we have to do that, there's two big areas to look at. And one, I think, is the super spikes, which have played an effect. Varholm worked with Mercedes to develop a carbon fiber plate in his spike plate, and also the track, the surface is the fastest surface we've ever had. It's all athletes are saying, you know, it's like running on air, it's like kind of running on this hyper responsive surface. But then again, we've had so many athletes here running the last 5 days, and as we've seen, they're not exactly all running out of their skins, and they all have access to the same track, the same technology, but there's very, very few setting personal bests. And I mean, what we saw this morning for Varholm and silver medalist Roy Benjamin was not just running better than anyone in history. It was absolutely taking, as I said, the limits of human performance have been just sent into the stratosphere with what we watched. It was unbelievable.
Has there been any indication to what sort of percentage of performance improvement those carbon fiber plates actually provide the runner?
Well, actually, I think it's hard to know. The lower down the distances you go, the less effect they make. However, carbon fiber plates are kind of at times a misnomer, because there has been carbon plates in spikes and in running shoes for, you know, 20 years. A lot of times it works on the principle. Now, the technology has got better in recent years, but it was very interesting after the race. Varholm was, and I stood in, and Varholm was asked about spike technology, and he went on what sounded like a bit of a rant, basically. And it was so refreshing to hear, because basically Nike make their sprint spikes containing AirPods under the plate, and they also have like a layer of hyper responsive foam. And so basically what they've done, sprint spikes are traditionally just a very flat plane, a very thin hard sole, and there's nothing to them essentially. But Nike have started building up spikes up the middle distance that are thicker and more responsive. And Varholm went on a bit of a rant earlier, and someone said, did the track feel like you were running on air? And he actually said, well, it didn't, but Roy Benjamin was running on air because he had that AirPods in his things, and he said, I hate them. And he said basically, when we sat down, he worked with Puma, who worked with Mercedes to develop this carbon fiber plate in his bike. And he said that they had said he wanted to be credibility in the shoe and credibility in performance. And he said, look, I get it with middle distance, long distance runners. They're out there for so long that they need cushioning under their spike. He was like, there's no reason to have a big thing under a sprint spike. And he said it's like a trampoline, and he literally said it's BS, and he said the actual word as well. He said those sort of spikes are nonsense, and he said what we built was a spike that is credible, I think. And so I think there's no doubt it is an effective spike, and no doubt it is the fastest track we've ever seen, but we've also seen the best two performances ever in his event. And I think, honestly, I think I've never seen a performance like that in athletics from Usain Bolt's world records, even going back to Carl Lewis, Haile Gebrselassie, anything. I think what we've witnessed this morning, and I suppose what most Irish people will have slept through, was the greatest athletic performance of all time.
It's the magnitude of the way he beat his own world record, Cathal. Like, I was just off the top of my head. Is it literally on Bolt's level in Berlin that the record that still stands? Is it that level of taking such a huge slice off the world record, or where does it rank on those terms?
Yeah, I mean, they do actually have, it is a whopping chunk. I mean, he took 0.76 off the world record. That equates to about 7 meters of track. So if you can imagine the very best person of all time previous to Warholm, who was Warholm himself back in June when he set the world record, he was 7 meters better today than he was. And Roy Benjamin was 6 meters better. And then the previous world record before Warholm broke it in June had stood for 29 years to Kevin Young. And the third placer today, Alisson dos Santos of Brazil, also broke that. So you had three generational talents. Obviously, the spikes and the conditions and the track played a part. But you had three of the all-time greats going head-to-head. And that's why anytime I was previewing the Olympics, people ask you about the 100 meters and the 1500 meters. I always said the two races to watch are the 400-meter hurdles. If you don't watch anything else, watch them. Because we have this so rare collection of generational talents squaring off. And, I mean, it was just, it's unbelievable. I mean, there are comparison tables you can use to go across events and just say, okay, what does 45.9 equate to? And like for the 100 meters, it equates to about 9.60 or so. But like even one of the performances people said there on Twitter that maybe was the best Olympic final or the best race of all time was David Rudisha's 800 meter record at the London Olympics, which he ran from the front. He ran 140.91 for 800, which still stands that world record. Someone did the comparison on Warholm's time today and it equates to a 139.800, which is just like wow. a cyberspace time, you know.
That's incredible. And
I'll give you an example. He had 10 barriers to clear in that race and he ran 45.9. I think he would have beaten, the 400 meter heats were on last night here. I think he would have beaten about 12 athletes jumping 10 barriers who were in that race. And I think he only needed to run 0.3 seconds faster to make the 400 meter semifinals at the Olympics. And that's why jumping 10 barriers. It's utterly out of this world. And anyone who is here in the stadium, like obviously it was an empty stadium, but we were sitting here and there was a good few, several hundred journalists and all. And everyone I met was just looking at each other going, what did we just witness? It was incredible.
Carl, can you just explain why the track is so fast in as quick a manner and as concise a manner as possible?
Don't worry, I'm not intelligent enough to explain it in any depth, but from conversations I've been having here, traditionally, Mondo tracks, Mondo is like the world leader in track manufacturing. And traditionally, the harder track, the better. Obviously, it's like bouncing a tennis ball off a wall. If you bounce it off a carpet, it doesn't bounce as far. And that was always the way. But in recent years, they've developed. So people say the track does feel slightly softer than previous iterations of Mondo tracks. But it's what it is far more responsive. And someone told me that when they do tests with it, how they test that responsiveness is essentially dropping like a metal ball, like a little marble or something, from the height of a meter and seeing once it hits the surface, how high back up does it bounce. And I was told today by someone, I suppose, in the know, working involved in this, that with this track, it bounces, I think it's over 70 centimeters, which is higher than a 70% energy return. So that obviously helps. But again, if it helped that much, and if the spikes helped that much, everyone has access to these spikes now. Everyone would be running out of their skin. Everyone would be smashing the personal best. That's not happening. So that's why I think it's fair to mention all these things, but to only use it as the explanation is completely unfair, because we literally have watched the greatest race of all time.
Like, as you said, Cal, greatest race of all time. And like, to be there, this is like a Woodstock 1969, I was there kind of thing. Like, it's really, really incredible. And look, not the full capacity stadium that we would have loved to have had for a race like that. But I mean, was the atmosphere eerie during that race, considering how unbelievable it was and how the stadium wasn't as full as it should have been? Or did people forget about the empty seats for those 40 odd seconds?
I think everyone forgets, you know, they do have a bit of music going, which is good. And there's a few hundred athletes allowed. Well, there's many athletes are allowed in from other events. They can come and watch if they want. And thankfully, a good several hundred are coming to watch each athletic session. So they're down near the front. They create a bit of atmosphere. Obviously, it's nothing like it could have been. But yeah, so it is quiet. But I mean, I think we've all got so used to that now that there is enough, and they have commentary over the PA system, you know, getting excited. So I think you can still feel 60-70% of the regular energy you would feel at an athletics event when a performance is as special as that was this morning. And just, you know, I suppose the atmosphere going around, I talked to one of my friends, Phelan Kelly, who's a coach of Team Ireland. One of his athletes got through the 1500 meter heats earlier, and he and another athlete, a person I know, Gerard O'Donnell, is working as the team press attaché, and we're in a WhatsApp group, and all three of us just said that's the best thing I've ever seen. And Phelan was over on the back straight as Warholm was unfortunately walking an empty stadium lap of honour. And Phelan just leaned over the barrier, he said, and said to Warholm, "Man, that's the best thing I've ever seen." And Warholm just smiled back at him and said, "Man, it's the best thing I've ever done." And, you know, I think if you went around here and you're talking, you know, I'm talking to journalists here, some of the British guys who covered like the Euro final for them a few weeks ago, who've been to World Cup finals, who've been to everything, who were there for Bolt when he did that world record in Beijing. And pretty much all of them just can't believe, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, can't believe what they watched. They're truly just blown away by the experience of having seen that, because 46.70 was the world record before today. Warholm himself said he thought he could run 46.4, 46.5. No one ever thought anyone could run 40 under 46 seconds for it. And he said, we asked him, what was your first reaction once you saw the clock? And he just said, this is sick. And I think he himself couldn't believe it. And he's a lovely guy. He is very transparent about everything. And, you know, in this sport, there are great suspicions always accompany great performances. And I would be as cynical myself about so much. But there has never been the whiff about Warholm's background, about his training group, about his coach, about his agents. There's never been an association. And normally if someone ends up testing positive or something like that, if you're around this sport and you talk to enough people and you talk to people like Thomas Barr, you know, talk to his rivals, the whispers always do go around. And I have never heard one whisper about Warholm. And that's why so many other events, when I watch astonishing performances, the thought immediately comes into your head, is it dirty? When I watched that this morning, and I think when most people in athletics and who know athletics watched that this morning, we didn't for once get that feeling, because there is a major kind of belief and a trust in Warholm. Now, whether that, I suppose time will tell whether that stands up, but I think there's a great hope in athletics at the moment and a great belief that it will.
Like the rivalry as well between Warholm and Ry Benjamin. Like you mentioned, his comments about not being a fan of the AirPods or lots of foam in the shoes. Another great quote from Warholm after the race. He said, he was asked about this, as you tweeted yourself, Cahal, but the possibility of a late mistake might have cost Ry Benjamin the gold. And the quote, all credit to him, but if that mistake cost him the gold medal, he shouldn't have done it in the Olympics. Like, this is the rivalry we needed for Paris 2024, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, it's an unbelievable rivalry, and they're both genuinely lovely guys. You know, I think, like, I've gone to a good few Diamond Leagues, and like I remember a couple of years ago, Warholm was world champion. I was up getting my food at the counter, and he recognized me from another event. And normally a lot of athletes wouldn't give you the time of day, but he kind of just, I'd spoken to him once in my life, and he came over and asked me how I was traveling, all this sort of guy. And I was like, I'm a nobody, why are you talking to me? And I remember another event in Boston where I was at the track filming some stuff, doing some stuff for World Athletics, doing some work. And he was going for a shuttle. And I remember Ry Benjamin walked like a few hundred meters out of his way to come over to me and just tell me that there was a car going back to the meet hotel if I wanted to join him and stuff. And I just thought, how many A-list stars in world sport would kind of, I guess, be so down to earth? And I know it probably says a lot about global superstars in sport that just normal acts of human kindness are kind of the exception rather than the rule. But I genuinely, in Warholm and in Benjamin, you have two of the best role models you could put up for the sport on and off the track. And I think that's what's great for athletics, which is a sport that through its own deeds and misdeeds has been dragged through the mud so many times that you now have this wonderful event. And it was the same in the high jump the other night with Gianmarco Tamberi and Mutaz Essa Barshim splitting that gold medal. Again, two of the best role models, two of the loveliest, most entertaining guys you could find. And there's plenty of other names I could mention who are not nice guys in the sport and who people would be deeply suspicious of. But with Benjamin and Warholm, there is a belief that these guys are legitimate and they seem like great guys off the track as well.
Just want to touch on some of the Irish storylines before we let you go, Cathal. This morning you mentioned Andrew Coskren there. He got through from his 1500 metre heat. Kelly Harrington was saying Hakuna Matata after her fight earlier on. I think Andrew Coskren's best quote, talking to David Gillick afterwards, was, it's great crack, like, summing up his Olympic experience. You love his confidence and his swagger. And then Phil Healy in the 400 metre finished fourth in her heat, again for the second consecutive day, narrowly missing out on the next round. Are things starting to look a little bit more positive when you zoom out and look at the Irish performances overall now?
They absolutely are. I mean, we had a dire few days. You know, there's no other way around it there from Friday to, apart from the mixed relay, I'd say the Irish team had a dire few days from Friday to Monday. Lots of underperformances for various reasons. And this morning, coming to the athletics track, we didn't hold much hope for the Irish. Andrew Coskren, like, he just about snuck in as one of the last men into the 45-man field. He's now down to the last 24. And for a guy like him, who was kind of in the doldrums, in the kind of post-collegiate, like, twilight zone of not really knowing what to do with his life and his career a few years ago, having met his coach, Phelan Kelly, and kind of come back and trained professionally and given it everything and smashed his PBs, not just to get to an Olympics, but to now be in the Olympic semi-final, is a remarkable achievement. And again, he executed that race to perfection this morning. Phil Healy, your heart went out to her yesterday. You know, she walked off the track and she was utterly devastated with her performance in the 200, even though it wasn't that bad. And she said she came down to the track today and, you know, emotionally, the high of the mixed relay, she wasn't going to sleep until 4:30, 5 in the morning. You know, it was inevitable she would have been a bit flat for her individual events, but she sacrificed essentially the chance there, her best chance there, to take one for the team in the relay. And she said she came down to the track and she felt, I guess, on such a downer after yesterday that they were thinking about not running. And I think Shane McCormick, her coach, had basically given her the out, said, look, let's just warm up, see how you feel. And if it's not there, let's just not go to the line. And Phil said, she said to Shane in the warm-up area, she was like, I'm not sitting in those stands. Even if I feel terrible, I'm not sitting in those stands watching and wondering what might have been. So she went out to the track and she ran the second fastest time I think she's ever run for 400 metres, finishing fourth. Unbelievable finish. And it was great to see her after being so hurt and down after walking out the track after the 200, to be able to finish her Olympics on a good note and just to say that, yeah, there's a Europeans and a World Championships next year. She can be in the European final and she can be in the World Championship semi-final. And then, yeah, our 200 metre men, just to round it out, I suppose, Leon Reid and Marcus Lawler, two really good performances. Leon is into the semi-final tonight. Didn't want to engage too much for understandable reasons about off-track issues that he's been going through, but he's very much in there now into the semi-final with the fastest run of the year. And Marcus, a guy who'd been kind of misfiring all year, he'd been running 20.9 21.0 for 200 meters best run of the year, 20.7. again, being Marcus, he's better than that, so he's not happy, but it was much better than he's been running all year, and he can hold his head up very high walking away from this.
Yeah, a couple of season bests there on the 200 meters. It's interesting that you described prior to the last couple of days as a dire Olympics up until this point, because it's always an interesting question about how much criticism the team leave themselves open to, given other than football, it is the most competitive sport in the world quite a lot over these distances. And it was interesting actually listening to Sonia on the highlight show on RT on Saturday night talking about the mixed relay, and she was making the point that Ireland should be in a position to change their starters for the final of a mixed relay, which I think Darren Maloney described it as ruthless. And it is a ruthless view to take such a great performance out, or one of the great performers from such a performance out, and replace him with somebody else. But it kind of spoke to me of a ruthlessness in Sonny O'Sullivan's approach that maybe doesn't exist entirely in Irish athletics at the moment, that I don't want to say there's a satisfaction with certain results, but there is definitely an approach that Sonny would have had that obviously leads her to being one of Ireland's greatest ever sports people, that is kind of required if some of these Irish athletes are going to make the next step.
I fully agree with that. I mean, I remember talking to some of the other athletics journalists who've been on the beat back into the Sonia and Katrina McKiernan days, and going back to John Tracy, Eamon Coughlin. And, you know, we spoke about Sonia, and, you know, who in my mind is the greatest Irish sports person ever. And she was a cold-blooded killer, you know. Like, I know Sonny quite well, and I'd have no fear saying it. I'm sure she'd say it herself, and she's a lovely woman. But in terms of her training, her preparation, and her attitude to the sport, she was like an assassin and obsessive. And I think she was one of those, had a kind of a ruthless streak in her career when it came to performance and when it came to performing her best. And I think in Irish athletes, sometimes you do wonder sometimes if when they come to an Olympics and they're disappointed? Are they asking enough hard questions of themselves and their setup in the aftermath? And you could totally understand why many wouldn't, because, you know, it's a very, like, a lot of these athletes who are going out maybe here, whether they're running their best or whether they're underperforming, don't earn basically any money from the sport. Some might get $5,000 for the year. Some might be on $12,000 or $20,000 off the sports council. Very little private sponsorship. Most of them are still working part-time, if not full-time, for many of them. And to give everything up and to maybe the best thing for them is to move out of Ireland to find the technical expertise. Maybe for others, it's to stay at home. But I think disappointment at a championships comes down to how you react to it. And a lot of these athletes have, you know, had disappointments here, but I guess the hope is that they will reflect and say, can I be better? And to be honest, knowing them, there's not many athletes across this Irish team. I think maybe when you go to like a European indoor championships, maybe European championships, you do have the old classic championship tourists where they're kind of just almost happy to get the kit, happy to be there. And I think sometimes but at this level, it's different. It's two tiers above a European championships. And I think all the athletes I know in the Irish team, I wouldn't say anyone in there is not reflecting extremely critically on their performance and is not asking themselves the question, because I think a lot of these athletes, you know, Phil Healy spoke about it. She changed courses. She was doing nursing in UCC and just realized that wasn't a career path for her 20s that could, I guess, be combined with high level athletics, given the long shifts and the time on your feet. So she went in, started over and did a course in computer science. All these athletes have made decisions like that have, you know, athletics is the sun around which their whole world orbits. And I think when we're looking at them, maybe they're getting dumped out in the heats and maybe they're underperforming. We have to remember how much they've given to be here in the first place. And also remember that 99.9% of them do not have the talent of Sonia Sullivan and are therefore not in a privileged enough position whereby if they give up their whole lives and they move to the other side of the world, it's going to pay off for them, because, you know, for a lot of them, paying off might be making a semi-final rather than winning an Olympics and being an Irish sporting legend.
Yeah, for sure. Cathal, great insight as ever. Thanks a million for taking the call.
Thank you.
Cheers. Cathal Dennehy there, athletics writer who is based in Tokyo at the moment.
It's not like it's a competition that's on again next year. You have to wait a full Olympic cycle to go again. Realistically, most of the team aren't going to be here again for the next Olympics, so it's like it's do or die.
For the best Olympics coverage, subscribe to the OTB Highlights podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.